For school administrators, getting ready for the new academic year means making sure school is safe for everyone. But what's the best approach? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss school safety research and a class designed to prepare district leaders for crises of all kinds are Northern Kentucky University College of Education Associate Dean Ginger Blackwell. Thanks for being here, Ginger.
Thank you.
Learning Policy Institute Senior Researcher Jen DePauli. Thank you for being here, Jen.
Thank you.
And R.A. Jones Middle School Assistant Principal Edmundo Echevera. Welcome, Edmundo.
Thank you.
Welcome. We appreciate everybody being here. Jen, help us understand the data. We hear about deadly school shootings. It seems like every school year. Is violence increasing in schools?
Violence has actually been dropping in schools over the past decade or so, although it doesn't seem like that when, like you said, we do hear about these school shootings. School shootings actually reached their highest point in 2023 and have also since been dropping. So yeah, when we think about violence in schools, we actually are in a pattern of decreasing incidents.
Well, Jen, what about other victimization of students that isn't fatal? How common is that in schools? What kind of impact can that have on students?
Yeah, so like I said, all incidents of violence have been down over the past so many years. We don't have the most recent federal data, but what we do have shows us that that has been in a decreasing pattern. But you're absolutely right. When violence is prevalent at schools, we know that that negatively impacts students. It can impact their attendance in schools. It can impact their mental health, their academic achievement. So it has a broad impact on students when it does happen, when they are exposed to violence in their learning environments.
Ginger, I know NKU had a school safety course for graduate students over the summer. What prompted that? What was the idea behind that?
Well, the idea for that class came to me when I was when I first came to NKU. It was 2017, 2018, and my job was to play student teachers. And that year, in early 2018, there were two high-profile shootings. One was at Marshall County High School in Kentucky, and the other one was in Parkland, Florida. And both times those happened, I had student teachers who came to me, and they said, I'm not really sure I want to continue in this profession. Mm-hmm. And I realized at that time obviously, that's a real concern, and that's something that every educator has worried about, and we would be lying if we said that we didn't. However, school is a very safe place overall, and so I realized they were basing that on the media coverage of incidents like that, and school safety is much broader than that. It entails much more than that, and that schools and educators are not helpless, that there are actually things that we can do to make schools safer, and that's really the focus of the course.
Well, tell us more about that, because the course wasn't solely about school safety as it relates to school shootings, right? I mean, it sounds like there was another guiding principle to the whole course.
Yes, it covered every type of school safety, so social and emotional safety, in addition to physical safety. And we focused a lot on what to do to prevent negative things from happening in school. And one of the things I realized, I was a high school principal for a total of 9 years, and I realized in my own learning there was a gap. I never was taught how to manage a crisis when it happened. And hopefully none of us will deal with a school shooting. And the chances of that happening are very rare. However, if you're a principal, you will deal with crises of multiple kinds. So a student may commit suicide. You may have students who are in car accidents. You may have a teacher die in the middle of the year. There are bullying issues. You may have an angry parent who shows up. So there are multiple things that we need to deal with. And so we focused a lot on not just the moment of when the crisis happens, but what can we do to prevent negative things from happening in school? And then if they do happen, how do we handle that and make sure that school continues to be a safe place for our faculty and our students?
Yeah. And I should say, some of those years you were principal at the school where my daughters went.
Yes, which is very exciting.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So, Edmundo, you're an assistant principal in Boone County now. What made you want to take this course over the summer?
Well, as the course is very holistic in its approach, not just the hardening of the security measures, but also looking at how do we make the school environment much more welcoming, which is you know, very important because we have, you know, if we have 700 students in a school and 94 adults, we need every single person to be committed to the safety. So I had been to the conference for the Kentucky Center for Safe Schools. I've been through several of our training modules that's in our own school, and I've even gone to national conferences regarding school safety. But all of those pieces needed to be put together. And in this course, being that it was for graduate students and specifically for aspiring or practicing leaders, that we would have an idea, a better idea of what we want to do, approach school safety. And when it comes to students, they're very complicated individuals. And so any help or education that we can get helps. And I found the course very helpful.
Yeah. Well, and especially young people, they can change so much during the course of a school year, you know, emotionally and all those kinds of things. Edmundo, did the course change your perspective on school safety? What did you feel like you really learned?
It did really change it in the sense that I was very committed already to it, but it did help push me into direction looking at more, you know, Kentucky has a law on safety and resilience. And so looking at that second part of the formula, and it's, you know, we're, as Dr. Blackwell already mentioned, we have we can have all kinds of crises. And so how do we help the students with their resilience, and how do we mitigate the trauma? And that all has to do with school culture. And so a lot of the class focus on, as leaders, we help our faculty help our students, and we're all helping each other. And reflection is a big part of that. So it's really pushed me to consider, how do we support each other? How do we support our students in ways that are intentional? Because we've already done it. We've done so, as caring human beings and as professionals. But we have to be more intentional if we're going to make sure that we don't lose anybody in the process.
Yeah. Is that particularly tricky for an assistant principal? I know when I was growing up, the assistant principal was kind of the bad cop in the good cop, bad cop situation.
Well, we do have to manage our responsibilities. And one of my favorite responsibilities is school safety. But it's really everybody's. And I think we, you know, part of the new training that we look at with our students and as a district, creating that sense of belonging and training ourselves on how to help students feel included and welcome, is that we're not just there to punish, especially, you know, when we look at like a threat assessment. We're really there to find ways to help the students. So we have a very prescribed procedure that has been vetted through many organizations. And our goal is to make sure that we identify the help and that we can give the students and find where they are. So it's really more about helping the students. And if I approach it that way, it feels like it's just part of my great job.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about school safety and preparing district leaders to respond to crises of all kinds. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jen, when it comes to school safety, it seems like a lot of districts have looked to things like metal detectors, security cameras, systems that kind of help harden school buildings. What does research show about how effective that is?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, what we've already been talking about in this conversation completely is backed by the evidence. The research shows that those physical hardening strategies, they can be not only not effective at stopping school violence, but actually harmful to students' well-being and sense of safety in schools. And I really just want to emphasize something that, like I said, has been said over and over again in this conversation, that we really need to be paying attention to the psychological sense of safety just as much as their physical sense of safety. And that goes for students and staff. When we look at the evidence, we know that successful violence prevention programs rely on creating safe and supportive schools and have strong foundations of support for student mental health and well-being. And that actually comes not just from the research on schools, but the research on school shootings that was conducted by the federal government in the decades after the Columbine shooting. The National Threat Assessment Center says that in order to address threats to stop school violence, schools must first focus on building a safe and connected school climate. And that's really what is at the heart of every time you talk about school safety that I think is sad. It gets missed so much, and people want to talk about school hardening when, like I said, the research does not back the fact that school hardening metal detectors, security cameras, you know, some of the new technologies that we're seeing actually really have no evidence behind them. And like I said, can ultimately make students feel less safe in the classroom.
Well, because Ginger, a metal detector isn't going to stop bullying. I mean, those kinds of things, right? And those are some of the crises that administrators have to deal with all the time.
That's correct. And that's far more common. And it's something that every principal will deal with at some point.
Yeah. Well, Jen, what can you tell me about school safety drills? So many kids starting at pretty young ages are going through those now. Do you have information about how effective those are and how they affect children?
Yeah, we're just starting to see the research come out on those. And what we're seeing is a little bit scary. We do know that they can have a negative psychological impact on students. You know, I think a lot of places are trying to think harder about how they carry out those drills that aren't going to, mess with students, sense of feeling welcome and belonging and feeling safe in their classrooms. But like I said, it's really very new, the research on those, even though they have been in place for decades. I mean, I was a teacher. I actually taught in Oak Hill schools in Cincinnati. And I remember doing those drills and seeing the sense of dread on students' faces. So it is good that we are trying to look at what those are doing. But like I said, the research is pretty new in that area.
Edmundo, is that something that you all do in your school? How do you kind of walk that tightrope where you're making sure kids know what to do, but that they're not, you know, upset by the drill process?
Yeah, I think when, especially we, at our schools, we can have students that are new to the country. We have students who don't understand English very well. English is a second language. And so all students, they all need to know what's going on. So honesty, and again, it's part of that trust building. And, you know, being very candid about why we're doing this and explaining the process. And then thinking about what, you know, there has to be a return on our practice. If it's going to traumatize our students, then we have to really reconsider it. And that's where bringing other professionals. We have guidance counselors on our staff. We have a safety team composed of very different people, including teachers. And so we'll talk about what we will be doing before we implement it, simply because it takes that building, those professionals who know those students. And so it can differ from building to building. But there are some best practices when it comes to that. And, you know, ironically enough, we have some students who may be coming internationally from war-torn countries with violence, and yet they get traumatized, or because of that, they get re-traumatized. And so we have to be conscious of that. And I think people in the building know their students best. And so they have to be working together to help mitigate any kind of negative effect.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, maybe you shouldn't wait to give away your money. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about school safety and training for school administrators. My guests are Northern Kentucky University College of Education Associate Dean Ginger Blackwell, Learning Policy Institute Senior Researcher Jen DePauli, and R.A. Jones Middle School Assistant Principal Edmundo Echeverra. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jen, a lot of states in the U.S., including Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana, require policies related to behavioral threat assessments. Can you just briefly explain what a behavioral threat assessment is?
Sure. So a behavioral threat assessment, as it's, you know, laid out in all of the top models, is basically a system where a multidisciplinary team, so an administrator, a social worker, mental health professional, school counselor, and then usually a school-based law enforcement officer form, like I said, that multidisciplinary team. And basically what it is a system for reporting threats. So if a student makes a threat in the classroom, staff member or another student could report that threat. It would go to that multidisciplinary team, and they would then go through a process to determine whether or not that threat was legitimate or not. And I could go a lot deeper into that, but I think that's really the core of it. And what people have been employing in their schools is a kind of a very similar model that basically, and let me back up and say, The key to these models is that not only does the staff need to be well-trained in them, but it needs to be support-oriented. So it is not intended to push kids into disciplinary measures. It is intended to figure out if the threat is real, if it can be substantiated, if the child could carry through with it, and if not, what kind of support does that student need that maybe they're not already receiving that led to that threat taking place.
Ginger, what can go wrong if these behavioral threat assessment policies are implemented poorly? I guess I'm wondering, can this result in profiling students, you know, based on their race or even if they look or behave differently from their classmates? Like, what do you have to make sure you're getting right and what can go wrong with this?
Yeah, you really have to base all of the discussions and all the decisions on evidence. And so, you know, when you go back and look at some of the prior school shootings, one of the things you notice is that there were warning signs that were out there. And had a threat assessment protocol been in place, some of these could have possibly and probably been stopped. And so the goal is to get a team together where you can look at different aspects of the student's behavior and base a decision on that. But there have been times where people have said, oh, that's a teacher's kid. So, you know, he would never do anything like that. So you really have to take the emotions out of it, the personal relationships out, and just look at the facts. And again, to Jen's point, the goal is to provide an intervention that leads to support, not disciplinary action. It's to get the student the help so that they can get better and the crisis can be avoided.
Yeah. Edmundo, how important is that at the school level, making sure all those, that whole team is on the same page and all those different disciplines are involved?
Well, it's very important, and especially the training to faculty to reassure them, because every school I've ever worked in, it's a faculty that really, really cares about students. And so they do worry that this might happen, and that is a student might be labeled. So they know that the student might need help. And then also working with students to reassure them that their friends aren't going to get in trouble, that this is about finding support. And we are a community school. Every school is a community school. And so we want to make sure that we are making school communities safer, but also helping. Because some of these students, as you know, Dr. Blackwell mentioned, in the cases that we've had of perpetrators, they've all left signs. They all have some form of leakage in terms of manifestations. And there were classmates and teachers and community members who might have heard something. And the behavior threat assessment is a procedure, a protocol that allows us to be evidence-based and to identify what the student needs and the next steps. And so that's why, you know, we always come approach the situation with what resources do we have and how can we connect the student and the parents. And the parents are a big part of the process as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jen, we were talking earlier about some of these measures schools take to harden the buildings, whether it's, you know, metal detectors or security cameras, things like that. You talked about culture being so important. If you had to boil it down, what is most effective in improving school safety? Is it all about building that trust and a positive culture, Jen?
Yeah, I think you cannot underestimate how important it is to build relational trust in schools. And that trust needs to be between students and staff, and between the school and families. I really think if you're not grounding any school safety strategy in that, then it's ultimately going to fail. You know, like we talk about the fact that positive relationships are so important. We talk about the fact that having mental health resources and support is very, very important. I love that I just heard community schools, because I think that's such a great model and really puts things in places to connect students to those supports. You know, I also heard Ginger earlier mention social emotional learning. You know, there's different programs and different strategies and ways to incorporate social emotional learning that can help reduce behavior problems and can increase, you know, strong relationships, engagement and learning. And then I think, too, we also have to be looking at restorative practices. You know, so often we turn to exclusionary discipline policies that push kids out, that make them more disconnected from school, and what they need is more connection to the school. So all of those things are things that we know work, that make for a strong school foundation for school safety.
Ginger Jen just talked about exclusionary practices, and I, from a parent's perspective, I'm guessing that's something like suspension or expulsion, and I saw you nodding your head in agreement with her. Can you talk about that a little bit more? Because, you know, when I was a kid, you know, if you got in trouble, real big trouble, that's what happened. What's the philosophy there?
I think the philosophy on that has changed over the years. And I'm thinking back with a little embarrassment to my time when I was first a principal. And that was really the protocol. If a student misbehaved really severely, they were suspended and sometimes expelled. And I think what we've seen over the course of time is that that is not effective. And in fact, it can make students who have grievances have a larger grievance, and then they can act on that. So I think the research shows that that is not best practice, and we are moving away from that. You know, not so much out of school suspension. Sometimes there's in-school suspension, but we're moving toward, as she said, more inclusive practices that we know that's what kids need, and that's what's going to help them improve.
Edmundo, how tough is it to balance that at the school level, though? Because you have to have discipline. You know, it can't be a Lord of the Flies situation where the kids are all doing whatever they want. But how do you balance that discipline with that compassion?
Well, you know, the great thing about all these resources is that they've been vetted for many, many years through many agencies. And so, and there's a lot of training that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. So I feel confident that the most important aspect or the most important element of it is looking after the student's well-being. Mm-hmm. And then that means we don't just, deal with the situation at hand. We deal with the facts. But we also look forward in terms of this is a member of the community, and they're connected to parents, and their parents are connected. And so we have to think about what is best for everyone. There is an accountability model. Once a behavior threat assessment has been conducted, we still have to look at an accountability model. There still has to be a question of safety. So if it's a safety question, there is no ambiguity. But we're dealing with a child, and we're dealing with a child that we are very, very hopeful is going to be a productive member of society and in the community. And so that means we have to have the very long view, a very compassionate approach with accountability. And so I feel confident that the behavior threat assessment and the training and the goals of every educator I've ever worked with is aligned with that. So I feel very confident that we can balance that need.
Ginger, what about helping teachers feel safe? You started by saying some of your student teachers early on were saying, I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there are cases where teachers don't feel safe in their classrooms. Teachers can be assaulted by students. How does that fit into this conversation?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And one of the students in the class talked about this a little bit. And she said, you know, this course really helped her because in the past she had focused on the crisis moment. And that is scary for anyone, whether you're the teacher or the student. And so, if that's where the focus is, then you feel powerless and out of control. And so I think all these processes and procedures that we have, and to add to what Edmundo said, there are so much more mental health supports today than there were before. And that's the missing piece. So if a student needs to go out of school, are they getting the support that they need while they're out? Are they not at home, you know, with no supervision where it's going to get worse? But I think focusing on what you can do as a teacher gives you most teachers by nature are control freaks. So we like to know that there are things that we can do to make the situation better. And so focusing on the relationships, knowing when to enact the threat assessment protocol, those are things that we can control in our own classrooms. And we can be alert and trained on what to look for and know that there are supports out there. So I think that gives us a lot more control in the situation, and teachers like that, knowing that there are things that they can do to make themselves feel safer and their students safer.
Jen, this was something I think Ginger brought up earlier, just the warning signs that have come before some of these school shootings that we've all heard about. How many school shootings are perpetrated by current or former students or by people who have experienced bullying? What does the research show on that?
Yeah, so, you know, it's varied. I think originally we saw a lot more school shooters were coming from inside the school. I think over the past few years, we've seen more former students or even you know, people who weren't actually really connected to the school. But I think when we talk about all these strategies, we are really focusing on, like I said, those warning signs that we could see. And I just want to go back and say, I think Ginger said this already, but there are signs that we can be aware of. And there also are, you know, different systems and whatnot that can be put in place outside of the school for those who are not students or former students. But we do know that a lot of them are students who have come from within a school system, who have grievances, who maybe were students who fell in the cracks and didn't receive the services that they needed. And so I think it's all the more important for us to be undertaking strategies that actually would prevent that from happening in the first place.
Edmundo, are you approaching the school year any differently after taking this course over the summer?
Well, I'm certainly going to, and I've been talking to teachers already, even though we've only seen them for a few days, about that idea of creating that welcoming environment and also reassuring them, though. As an administrator, people need to be reassured in that trust needs to be there and the transparency. They're all professional adults, and they all need to know everything we know when we know it. And that's important because just as our training and our reaction to students has changed, so is our teacher-administrator relationships. This is my 28th year, and I can tell you that the way I like to approach administration and with my colleagues is different than the way I was spoken to maybe 28 years ago. So we're changing, and we're more research-based, and I like that.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University College of Education Associate Dean Ginger Blackwell, Learning Policy Institute Senior Researcher Jen DePauli, and R.A. Jones Middle School Assistant Principal Edmundo Echevarria. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, maybe you shouldn't wait to give away your money. This is Cincinnati Edition.